On today's Compassion Radio.
You know, a pandemic where your sense of certainty or security is upset creates opportunities. There is an openness to the things of God that in a world where everything seems to be going well, we haven't necessarily seen. So I believe it's the church's privilege now to step right into the mess with a different perspective on what's happening.
Hi friends, Bram Floria here with Compassion Radio. Thanks for joining us today. So, are you ready for Thanksgiving yet? Are you ready to deal with all the mixed emotions that this unusual year might dump in the middle of the table? Well, let me ease your mind a little. First off, you don't have to fake it tomorrow. Yes, you can take a breath now. Second, you don't have to have everything sorted out or stuff your feelings in a bottle either. Okay, second breath. So what should you be doing to get ready? Well, they don't have any cookie-cutter answers for you, but I can tell you what those who lead are doing. And it's the topic of our conversation today. I'm welcoming back Mark Young, president of Denver Seminary, for part two of our interview. Yesterday, we discussed the mutual challenges of holding our respective ministries together in challenging times, and how Denver Seminary, particularly, is providing exactly the right kind of support and wisdom that new pastors need as they face the challenges awaiting them in a very turbulent time that we call right now. So now we'll jump right in where we left off yesterday. We feel challenged to bring the freshness of the gospel alive and kicking to people when we don't have a chance to leave our own studio or our own hometowns either.
Yeah.
That's our challenge.
I mean, there are limitations, right? There are limitations in using technology to have relationships. There's just no question about it. So as we cannot go, we have to adapt and do what we can, is the way I would describe it.
God's been reminding me, too, that every Sabbath has a limit. You know, we don't go into an eternal Sabbath rest. I think even heaven itself has a Sabbath built into it because we're with Jesus, but there's something new coming, too. This is a chapter. This is a forced Sabbath on our world, on our people, as we really sit there and think hard. Okay, it's been 9 months, now what? We want it to be done with.
Yeah.
And yet the chapter isn't quite over, but it will be. There will be a time when we're out of our pens and back into the world, and we got to figure out what we're going to be next. So what do you see coming? What is God telling you he's setting the world up for, and the church, the kingdom around the world, to be ready for in this next chapter?
Well, first of all, I've never wanted to claim the mantle of prophet, so I want to speak very humbly about how I see God at work in the world and what might be ways that we can join in with what God's doing in the world as we move forward. You know, I would say a pandemic or any type of scenario where your sense of certainty, talking about the Western world at this point, where your sense of certainty or security is upset, creates opportunities and desires for people to ask, well, where can I find a sense of certainty and a sense of security? Where are the anchors I can hold on to? So I do think, and certainly I could say some of the churches that I know who've been doing online stream services, I do think there is an increased desire on some people's parts or an increased willingness to say, I need something more than what I have, because what I have hasn't given me a sense of certainty or a sense of security in the midst of this. So I do believe, and even in our neighborhood, in conversations we've had, there is an openness to the things of God that in a world where everything seems to be going well, we haven't necessarily seen. So I believe it's the church's privilege now to step right into the mess with a different perspective on what's happening, a different perspective on loss, a different perspective on suffering, a different perspective on where we can find hope and what that hope actually is.
Okay, let me hold you there, because you're talking about an expectation that we know what we have. Here's my tough question, though. Do we know what we have to offer in a time like this?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, it's really interesting to me that of all the major world religions, we have the privilege of knowing the end of the story, that God is bringing the world to redemption. And because we know the end of the story of human history, we know the meaning of human history and that that's found in the gospel of Jesus Christ. So we absolutely know with certainty that in the midst of a pandemic, the death of Christ on the cross brings a life that nothing else can bring, that gives us perspective and a sense that what we're experiencing isn't meaningless, but is a part of history moving toward a redemptive end that God has established. We're just talking to our neighbors about this, the idea that, you know, we don't think this is random. We don't think that we are, and by the way, you have to be careful not to say that you don't think God created the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
But we don't think we have to go through this in a sense of believing we're just random victims. What we believe is that we walk through this fallenness in the world with a clear sense of God's presence with us. And because God is present with us, we know that we can step into whatever occurs in the next few days with a sense that his presence will provide for us a sense of security and certainty that nothing else can.
I've been reminding myself just in the past couple of days that God was very certain about when he wanted me to be born. And he was very certain that he wanted me alive at a time like this for something. And to be thankful that he thought of me for this time, that somehow he counted me as part of the team that would endure and come through this, is an honor, really.
But just think about how different what you just said is from the way someone who has no sense of overarching purpose or no sense that history is moving toward an end would describe these days.
Yeah.
That's the privilege of living in the story of Scripture, in God's great redemptive story. It gives us that sense of place and purpose.
You know, a couple of years ago, Mark, I sat down with friends in Eastern Czech Republic, just over the hill from where the Moravian movement began. Mm-hmm. And they were filling in more of the historical details that I was not as aware of from their story and why they felt that they kind of taken up the mantle a bit in reaching out to youth in Eastern Europe. The story that moved me the most, I think, was the unremembered Moravians, that after the first waves went out to the West and sailed the ships and met the Methodists and transformed the evangelical movement in America, there were others that knew God had called them to something special, but they couldn't make the breakthroughs to get to places in Africa they wanted to go, that they believed God had called them to. And the only opportunities that opened up to themselves were to sell themselves into slavery, so that they would have to be able to go to Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they went. They literally sold their lives away in order to be available to what God had called them to do. And you talk about stepping into certainty. I can't imagine that kind of commitment to say, I do this because it's good, because it's right, not because it makes any sense to you. Is that faith alive anywhere in this world today?
Oh, I do. I absolutely believe so. I think there are ways that we live into that sacrificial certainty that are less dramatic than selling ourselves into slavery, right? Certainly,
oh, Lord, I would hope
that is the kind of example that inspires us. And it is interesting that Moravians also did that in the West Indies as well as they went into that region. But yeah, absolutely, I see there are people of God who are saying, I'm going to live sacrificially in the midst of this pandemic so that I can live out a presence of God in the midst of suffering. I'll give you an example. We have a very strong chaplaincy program here at Denver Seminary. And our chaplains, our graduates, are placed in all kinds of chaplaincy ministries, military, hospital. And in this particular case, one of our chaplains, one of our graduates, is working in a memory care center for elderly people. You know, if you've been around someone who's struggling with Alzheimer's or dementia, that involves a special grace to begin with, right? Well, in the month of April, this particular chaplain saw, I believe in 1 week, 14 of their residents die because of COVID. And then in the following week, more died. And then they had a staff member die. And as she narrated the story, the overwhelming sense of loss, the grief, the pain, she bore that with them. She had to tell family members that their loved one had died via FaceTime and try to minister words of compassion to them when they couldn't even come in the building. This dear sister lived out a self-sacrificing commitment to Christ to be the redemptive presence of God in the lives of those staff members and residents and family members. So yes, I see that I see that happening in ways that the stories are never told, but I see it happening.
I think your friend Philip Yancey was so moved by that story, too, that he's written on it, and I'm thankful that you were in that place to make those kind of encounters happen.
Yeah, I'm glad Philip followed up on that. He asked me for her contact information. We did a podcast with Philip that is talking about the question of, is God in control when in the middle of a
pandemic?
That's
exactly like the kind of thing he would tackle.
Yeah, and I told that story on the podcast, and then he followed up. So I'm glad he did. That's great.
What do you make of the tragedy story coming out of South Dakota this week, of the nurse talking through her blog about all the people that can't face the reality of where they are with the disease when they're given opportunity to say goodbye to their family, that they're so twisted up with rage that this thing, which was not possible for them, which didn't exist, which didn't fit their politics, was still happening to their bodies. And that's all they could think about. They couldn't even think about their families to say goodbye.
Oh my, what a heartbreak. I'm not familiar with that story, but hearing you tell it does two things to me. It, first of all, it breaks my heart for their families and for them. But secondly, it brings me to the edge of rage as well. I think one of the startling and deeply disturbing realities of this past few months has been the willful deception of people for political gain and the willful denial of reality by those who wanted something to be true that isn't true. I am actually more enraged by those who willfully deceive than those who are deceived. But there is personal responsibility. We can make the choices to not just listen to what we want to be true, but to actually seek truth. I'm troubled by that, deeply troubled by that. This whole season for me has created an intense sadness. The greatest sadness is that evangelicalism, the movement that I still call my spiritual home, my identity in the Christian world, has in almost every regard lost its credibility because of the way we've engaged by uncritical support of a way of thinking without seeking truth.
I'm concerned about the suffering going on.
Yep.
And going forward, how we need to be. What are you finding now when you're talking to your evangelical friends about what to do next? How to be in the days to come? How do we engage the suffering around us, and how do we get honest with our ways we've deceived ourselves, maybe not even big ways, but little ways along the way, and step into truth in a way that really empowers us to be salt and light again?
Yeah. I think if we want to start with the question of truth, I like to say we need to seek truth, face truth, speak truth.
Friends, before we jump back to this important conversation with Mark Young of Denver Seminary, a quick reminder that it's your generosity and support that make Compassion Radio possible. Especially in a year like this, we need your vote of support. Call 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859, or give online at CompassionRadio.com in order to keep this program coming to you each day. And hear me when I say this. We are very thankful for you, especially now. And now, back to the interview. How do we engage the sufferings around us, and how do we get honest with our ways we've deceived ourselves, maybe not even big ways, but little ways along the way, and step into truth in a way that really empowers us to be salt and light again?
Yeah. I think if we want to start with the question of truth, I like to say we need to seek truth, face truth, speak truth. Seeking truth means we're going to have to listen to different perspectives. If we live in an echo chamber, we're only going to live in the state of confirmation bias. We're going to have confirmed what we want to be true. Mm-hmm. Facing the truth means when we see that there are other points of view that may discredit or may bring evidence to bear against what we want to be true, we face that truth. We admit it. And then speaking the truth means we speak it to others because we need truth. We need reality. We need to be able to live in the basis of what is, not just what we want it to be.
Before you move on with that, I just want to make sure we have identified here that this is not a one-issue statement you're making.
Not at all.
It is about approaching every question where there seems to be polarized opinions that can't mutually be true.
That's correct.
It's about all kinds of things in life.
Absolutely. Seek truth, face truth, speak truth. That may sound trivial, but it does preach. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. And it is, in fact, the way I believe we're called to live as the people of God. Truth is the foundation of our faith. Mm. If it isn't true, then, as Paul would say, our faith is useless.
Mm-hmm. Worse than.
So, worse, yeah. In fact, he says in 1 Corinthians 15, we're to be pitied above all people if the resurrection isn't true. The little rabbit trail, this whole thing about conspiracies, if there was ever a group of people who ought to be allergic to conspiracy thinking, it's the people of God.
Amen.
I mean, one of the greatest conspiracies is that Jesus wasn't raised from the dead, but his followers were just telling the story. They stole the body. I mean, anyway, I don't want to start ranting here.
That's a great turn of phrase, though, Mark, about the idea of being allergic and willingly wanting to be allergic to conspiracies. There is a great conspiracy against the souls of man. We know that. It's called Satan himself. His minions are quite busy with writing conspiracies that would get us off track.
That's right.
Anything, of course, that leads us away from an honest assessment of Jesus as he is.
That's right.
And allowing him to define what truth is in every sphere of life is going to be a falsehood.
That's right.
Just is.
That's very good. That's a good way to put it. And, you know, to follow up on your question, what do we need to be? Well, we need to be people of the truth. That's the first thing. And the truth about the reality we face, the truth about who God is, and the truth about God's presence in it, and the truth about what God's view of history is because of what Christ has done on the cross. So all of that has to be present. Beyond that, then, we're called to be people of compassion. Mm. I think, again, one of the greatest sins of the church in this era is that we demonize and make enemies in our minds of people who disagree with us. In some ways, we dehumanize people. Mm. They're not our neighbors anymore. They're members of the opposite political party, or they're people at the border who are trying to take our jobs away, or they're people who are simply nursing grudges from history. I mean, we as people are called to see all people as God's people, so to speak, meaning created in the image of God. And I actually like the translation, created as the image of God. Mm. But the issue for us is, if they are people, then we are called to love them. And they are people. Yeah. They are created as the image of God. We're called to enter into their lives with compassion. And then the third thing I would argue is compassion leads to generosity, which is that willingness to give of myself, give of my time, give of my resources to help alleviate the needs of others and to help work redemptively in their lives.
And especially of the kingdom of faith. I mean, if we can't take care of our brothers around the world, then we are...
Exactly.
Worse than an abandonment of your own family. I mean, you don't leave widows and orphans in the street to rot. Why would we abandon our family?
Exactly. You ask about the pandemic, what's God doing in this? This is an opportunity for the people of God to lead distinct lives in ways that cause others to say, why are you doing that? Why are you acting compassionately and generously? Why are you living sacrificially for the sake of others? This is our moment. Hmm. But if we get tangled up in politicizing it, if we get tangled up in making every decision that's made a win or lose, and don't step into the mess with a message of redemption, then we're not being who God called us to be.
Your definition of compassion so far, Mark, is exactly at the heart of what we've seen evidentially around the world. There's not been a war or a genocide that has been begun in this world that has not started with destroying our sense of compassion and identity with the family of humanity.
That's right.
We have to otherize. And the more we otherize people and make them less than, the more we are justified in doing whatever we have to do to protect us, the right ones. And when Christians swallow that bitter pill, that poison goes deep, generationally speaking. We had hundreds of years of slavery in this country because we bought into the lie that somehow it was justified and right. And of course, we look back at that with horror now, but we are still doing it. So what do we do, and how do we encourage the church right now? As you said, this is our moment. How do we encourage them to say, step into this kind of worldview that God has, the God view of the world? What would be your first challenge?
Well, I think that first challenge is admit that the world wants us to think otherwise and admit that we live under the influence of those who want to profit from deceiving us into thinking in exactly the ways you described. who want to profit from us being unwilling to seek the truth, face the truth, and speak the truth about people, about God, about what's happening. So unless we're willing to take a good hard look at ourselves, which, by the way, is always the beginning of revival in the church, isn't it?
Amen.
Being willing to take a look at ourselves and say we're not what God called us to be, then we won't have the impetus to make the changes in the way we think and act and what we value that are necessary for us to be the people of God. You know, here's a very practical thing. If we want to ask ourselves the question, coming out of certainly the most deeply divided and divisive political season that I can ever remember, if we want to be the people of God in that, what can we do? The answer, I think, the first step, find someone that you know voted differently than you. Sit down with them and listen. Don't sit down and try to convince. Don't sit down and try to argue. Sit down and listen and ask them, what were your key concerns? What fears were driving you? What hopes were driving you? Just listen to them. And as we listen to them, we're engaged in an act of generosity. We're engaged in an act of compassion. And we have the opportunity then to build a bridge of relationship built on their humanity and our humanity. But as long as we want to stay in our echo chambers and only think of people as a political party or a racial identity or other ways that we otherize them, I like that word that you used, which is a dehumanizing tactic, then we cannot be the people of God.
And how do you impart this ethic into your pastors in training?
You know, I love that. Oh, thank you for asking that question. We believe at Denver Seminary that it's absolutely essential that we listen to voices of people who are different than we are and who may disagree with what we believe. So as an educational institution, we have the privilege to read authors, engage their thought, to invite people to campus, and to listen carefully to what we can learn. I think that any approach to theological education, particularly with adults, that doesn't allow for the engagement with ideas or engagement with people with whom we disagree is an impoverished approach to theological education. And of course, one of the things, frankly, in the broader evangelical church is we haven't listened to African-American voices enough. We haven't read African-American theologians. And there is an incredible body of formative literature that most theological seminaries in our camp have ignored.
Yeah.
Well, we're changing that at Denver Seminary.
Amen. Not just learning the language and misunderstanding the definitions of the words, but stepping into how do these words come to have such gravitas within your experience? And why is it essential to your understanding of your theology and your missiology?
That's correct.
I've seen that internationally. Norm was very fond of saying, let's sit down at the feet of those who are on the front lines of faith because they are God's honored ones.
Yeah.
And for him, there was no greater honor than just sitting on the floor in the dirt somewhere and hear a Tibetan frontline evangelist pastor preach or talk with a Bible smuggler in China. Or with a young seminarian working in barrios in South America. When you go there and see the front lines where you know God's coattails are getting dirty and people are grabbing at them, you warm to the things that you know God is going to win.
That's right.
And you don't fear anymore because you're right where God's doing his stuff. And with him, he drives out the fear because his love is there.
That's right.
I appreciate that you have captured that in your generation, Mark, and that Denver Seminary is not a stuffy starch shirt institution. You are serious about wanting to wear work clothes.
Yep, absolutely right. We say to our board all the time, mission is messy.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to get into the mess, then you can't be involved in God's redemptive work in the world.
Mark Young, I want to thank you, first of all, for how you've done such a good job of justifying why Denver Seminary exists in the mix of those seminaries out there. And I know you're praying for the rest of your comrades in this work. You're praying for the other schools, training up pastors and things. You're praying for the church, and you're capitalizing on the opportunities of those who lost jobs and are suddenly available for kingdom work, and you're helping them along the way to make it possible for them to do the thing they always wanted to do in the first place. And now God's made it possible by disrupting their lives, probably.
That's true.
Thank you for that hard work and for being faithful in it.
Yes, we are absolutely for all of us who are engaged in helping the church be the church and then being the church in the midst of a world that doesn't know it really needs us, but really, really does.
My thanks to Mark Young, president of that preeminent theological training center, Denver Seminary. You'll join me again tomorrow for a very special look at the power of Thanksgiving in our lives and our history as a nation. I hope you'll start this year's unique and important Thanksgiving with us tomorrow morning. There's no doubt that trying times bring out the best and the worst in mankind. I pray that God will bring out the very best of Him in you today. Thank you for standing with Compassion Radio in times like this. I think you know that we're a unique voice in Christian radio. Your generosity and your faith in us make it possible for us to continue doing what we do each and every day. Please call us today and let us know you're standing with us. The toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. You can mail Compassion Radio at P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're online 24/7 at CompassionRadio.com. Don't wait, friends. Join us online to find out how you can be involved with this unique and timely ministry. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow for the next Compassion Radio.